Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the studios of radio station WOL in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. The president told us today at his news conference that he's sending to Congress in the next few days a special message on the subject of combating increases in the cost of living. And he indicated rather clearly that in that message, he will deal with the question of a ceiling on wages. He said flatly that he is not planning to place any ceiling on wages himself, but he dodged the point as to whether he'll suggest that Congress do so. By way of background, I learned on very good authority late this afternoon that Mr. Leon Henderson has been urging the president for some days past to take some sort of effective steps to stabilize wages in all lines of industry all over the nation. And he has said that unless that is done, it will be impossible for him to hold down prices effectively. This message that by the president that's in the making may be the answer to those recommendations by Mr. Henderson. We'll soon find out on that point. This much does seem to be certain. Neither Leon Henderson nor the president are very favorably impressed with the new wage policy that's been adopted by the War Labor Board. That policy, you know, is to recognize the right of all workers in all lines, war production or otherwise, to have sufficient of a wage increase between the 1st of January 1941 and the 15th of May of this year, that's about 15-month period, to counteract a 15% increase in the general cost of living during that 15-month period. If they have received a wage increase of that amount since January 1st of 1941, they don't get any more. If they have not, they are entitled, according to this policy, to an increase not more than that amount. Mr. Henderson feels that whether that's fair or not, the increases that are granted will boost the cost of production and thereby boost the price of things that are bought. And that is what he and the president are trying to fight. There are all sorts of developments on the rubber situation tonight. It's a bit ironical. For weeks, you and I were trying to get some action to keep civilian automobiles on tires. Now the action is coming so thick and fast that it's hard to keep up with. The president, as you know, announced that total collections in the nationwide scrap rubber drive amounted to almost 455,000 tons. He's appointing technical experts to find out how much net usable rubber there is in that total after the fabric and metal and other foreign matter is eliminated. But in any event, it's considerably more than the gloomy estimates that were turned over to the president by some of his advisors before this drive began. Some of those estimates, you may recall, were as low as 100,000 tons and even lower. Many estimates that supposedly were based on scientific information were as low as 200,000 tons. Perhaps the best record of the nation in this scrap rubber collection by the oil companies was made by the Lyon Oil Company of Arkansas, where they collected an average of 1 1/3 tons per employee. And second place, according to the figures that I have available, goes to the Standard Oil Company of California, which collected nearly 18,000 tons with only 17,580 employees. That's a little better than 1 ton per employee. The president indicated rather plainly that there will be no combination gasoline and tire rationing program for the nation as a whole. In Congress, the Senate actually began debate today on the synthetic rubber question. There's a bill under consideration to set up a separate agency that would have sole control over synthetic rubber production from alcohol, the theory being to get a more friendly administration of the alcohol rubber problem. It certainly, unquestionably, is a fact that the alcohol rubber problem has not been under very friendly administration thus far from the Rubber Reserves Corporation, but it's up to Congress to decide whether this is the best way to correct that problem or not. Senator Barkley, the Democratic floor leader and presumably representing the president's views on the matter, took the opposition side today, and so did other administration regulars in the Senate. In all fairness, it would seem to be wise at this stage to keep in mind the real objective. What we want is rubber by the quickest possible method. Rubber from alcohol, insofar as that method will produce rubber quicker than we can get it from petroleum, but not rubber from alcohol merely for the sake of getting it from alcohol. And it does seem to call for some careful consideration, at least, as to whether a separate agency would accomplish that objective. In the House of Representatives, a special committee was set up, composed of 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans from the Eastern Seaboard states, to begin next Monday an investigation into the Atlantic Seaboard problems on tires and, incidentally, on gasoline, too. The chairman of that committee is Representative Fitzgerald of Connecticut, and the ranking Republican is Representative Hartley of New Jersey. They announced that the first witness to be called on Monday morning by that committee will be a reporter by the name of Fulton Lewis, Jr., who has had a few selected words to say on the subject of synthetic rubber in the weeks past. The rubber industry itself presented its program for handling the tire shortage this afternoon. They opened a huge exhibit at the Willard Hotel here with samples of the kind of tires that they've been able to produce with synthetic rubber, also samples of the rubber itself and the things that go to make it up. They say that they can produce enough tires to keep all mechanically usable civilian automobiles on the road with 60% of the mileage, the total mileage of those cars last year. To do that, they say they want 75% of the butyl and thiocol rubber production in the present program, both of which are the very least important of the government's war program and represent a very small part of the entire synthetic rubber production. And they say they need, along with that, about 3,000 tons of natural crude rubber to cement the treads to the casings. That's a very small amount when you consider that the present stockpile of crude rubber is 600,000 tons. They say they also need 97,000 tons of scrap rubber, which apparently we have, and then some, in the rubber collection campaign. The most important angle of all is that this program that they announced today does not include the more than 200,000 tons of additional Buna S synthetic rubber, the high-grade type, which the Petroleum Coordinator's Office is in the course of whisking out of nowhere from the petroleum industry, as I announced to you last night. With all that, plus 8 million more tires, which Mr. Leon Henderson has on hand in, shall we say, economic refrigeration, frozen, there certainly ought to be a solution of the tire situation in sight. Now, in the last 3 or 4 days, ladies and gentlemen, I've had telegrams and letters from all over the nation about certain statements and accusations that have been made about the handling of post-exchange stores on United States Army posts. Those statements are that these post exchanges, which sell candy and soft drinks and all sorts of general merchandise to the soldiers in the Army camps, are run by the officers of the Army, that the post exchanges have made exorbitant profits, more than 13% in some months, and that the profits are spent by the Army officers on themselves, that those Army officers generally vote to spend it on a beer party or athletic equipment, that only the officers and not the enlisted men benefit from these profits in the post exchange stores, and that that is all wrong. Now, it's not my business to correct every misstatement that's made publicly in the United States, but in this case, it is a bit different. This involves a vital and fundamental part of the military security of the United States government, of you and me, the respect and confidence that soldiers have for their officers. And so it becomes something considerably more than just a harmless mistake of fact. If the enemies of America could pick the one thing that they'd rather do above everything else, it would be to destroy the magnificent relationship between American officers and American soldiers, the finest relationship in any army in the world, bar none. The effect of these statements has been to, or would be, to incite resentment, mistrust, ill will toward officers on the part of the soldiers. Nothing could be more dangerous, and so I've spent a good deal of time and care today getting the true facts for you on the whole situation as they come from the Army in official language, and here they are for what they're worth to you. The post exchanges are operated for the benefit of the privates and non-commissioned officers of the Army, And the officers and members of their family are merely, the commissioned officers and members of their families merely are permitted to buy there as a courtesy to them. These post exchanges actually are run by non-commissioned officers under the sergeants and corporals, under the supervision of a board of commissioned officers on each post, that board including the commanding officer of the post. A monthly audit of the books is made, and actual vouchers have to be presented for every sale by the post exchange and for every purchase of new stock by the post exchange. The office of the Inspector General of the Army also inspects those books, and the Army says that it's impossible for any shortage or irregularity to be covered up. The profits of every post exchange by actual Army regulation are spent by the officers, that is true. But every penny also by regulation is spent for the sole benefit of the soldiers themselves And the Army states that commissioned officers are the only people in uniform that cannot in any way benefit from the profits. The way it works is that at the end of the month, after the books are audited, the Board of Officers meets, and the chaplain, he'll say, wants a certain amount of money for charity work among the enlisted men. It can only be used by the enlisted men. The athletic director also will be allotted so much money for gloves and baseball equipment, and some more will be granted to the playground equipment for the children of the soldiers. The athletic equipment is solely for the soldiers themselves. After those allotments are made, the remaining amount is divided up among the companies that make up that post according to the number of men in each company, and the officers of that company are required by regulation to use that money for the benefit of the majority of the privates and non-commissioned officers in that company. Sometimes they buy a few extra items for the mess to improve the monotony of Army food. Sometimes it's spent on magazines, a new furniture for the recreation hall, or sometimes it goes into a party for the soldiers at which they have a keg of beer and are allowed to invite their girls. The officers never attend those parties, except that the officer in charge of the fund usually comes in for a moment at the start and says to have a good time. The officer of the day usually comes in at the end and tells them good night. Out of all the Army officers I spoke to today, not one could ever remember an officer so much as having taken a glass of beer at one of those parties. Hard liquor is flatly forbidden under any circumstances. I asked whether there's any possibility that the post exchanges might make the officers a gift of a party for the officers themselves. I was told that that is absolutely impossible, that it's against regulations, that the audits are so strict that it would be impossible to cover up, and that any officer involved in such arrangement would be subject to drastic punishment. The fact is, every penny of profits from every post exchange has to be accounted for, and it has to be devoted 100% and exclusively to the benefit of the soldiers themselves, and any officer who derives so much as a dollar's benefit is subject to court-martial. And let me say from personal experience that the tradition among officers in the Army is that the handling of those post-exchange funds is an almost religious trust in the administering administering the benefits to the soldiers themselves. And that's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until tomorrow evening, good night.
Mondays through Fridays at this time, Fulton Lewis, Jr. brings you the top of the news from your nation's capital. These broadcasts originate at WOL. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.